Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT. Thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery. With your host, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCAA 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Russell Targ. And he's going to be talking about his new documentary that's coming out, Third Eye Spies. Russell, welcome. Welcome to the House of Mystery.
Good morning. I'm happy to be with you.
I don't mean to sound gushy, but like I said, Russell, you are a legend, and I am honored that you're on the show with us today.
Well, you live long enough, you get to do a lot of interesting things.
True.
Nice answer.
Touché. Now, tell us, for the listeners that may not be familiar with you, and I can't imagine who that would be, but tell us a little bit about you. You know, what got you here? What got you involved in ESP studies and psychic studies, and particularly psychic spies?
Well, I'm a physicist, so I spent most of my life in the very beginning developing lasers and then building lasers for the CIA and for NASA. And in between times, I had a lifelong interest in psychic functioning. As a child, I had psychic experiences. And after 17 years of building lasers, I decided to bet my career that I could teach people how to get in touch with their own psychic abilities. So I made that pitch to the CIA. I said, we can teach your agents how to find people, see where they're hiding. I told NASA that I could help an astronaut get in touch with his spacecraft so he could tell if there's anything the matter with the spacecraft. So you can tell that what I decided is that I had the power to cloud men's minds so they would give me money to do something that sounded totally crazy. And in 1972, that was correct. So we started a program at Stanford Research Institute, supported by NASA and the CIA, to try and investigate psychic abilities, find out how ESP worked, and to what extent it could be made useful for the CIA. And we did that for 20 years.
Wow. Russell, you just said a lot there. Let's regroup just a little bit. Now, going back to the beginning, you said as a child you had psychic experiences.
Well, I had modest a bit. My vision is very poor. You can't tell that over the radio. But I did ride a motorcycle for decades, but in spite of that, I was legally blind and riding a motorcycle, so that made me believe in ESP. But the best evidence I can give you for the existence of psychic functioning is that we had $1 million support annually for the CIA to help them find hostages, downed airplanes, Russian weapons factories, all sorts of operational things. And as you know, the CIA is not easily amused. So our job was to prove that we're useful to them and that we could train people to get in touch with their psychic abilities so that they could do what we call remote viewing. Remote viewing is an ability that we all have that allows you to see into the distance and see into the future and describe what's happening there. And our pitch is that everybody has that ability to a greater or lesser extent. Some of the people who work with us in our program were world-class, exceptional remote viewers. Many of the people who came by were surprisingly good. For example, one of the ways that I would raise money for the program is that we would have a visit from, say, the Undersecretary of Defense, Walter LaBerge, came and said, "You guys have been working with us now for a decade. Can you show me something psychic? What are you guys doing?" And I'll say, "Okay, have your adjutant go hide someplace with my partner, and they will choose a random location in the San Francisco Bay Area, and then I will show you how to do it." See, I could find a psychic here who could locate them, but then you would think it's a trick, and you'd spend all your time figuring out how to target deceive me. But if I guide you to describe where your adjutant is hiding, and you have the experience, and then we'll take you to that place, that will be a lifelong memory for you. And he did very well, and it turned out that within a decade, he and I both had gone to Lockheed. He had gone to the general manager, and I had gone to the physicist. But Walter LaBerge was still my buddy, even though he was high up there and I was in the trenches, because I had shown him how to experience the part of himself that was psychic.
How did you develop your own ability? Who did you look up to, and how did you learn to understand it?
I think that I initially had the idea that something psychic was going on as a child. I was an enthusiastic card player, and I would frequently know in advance what the card was laying on top of the fish pile or the poker pile or the bridge hand, so I would know which way to take a finesse in bridge, and I wasn't a fantastic card reader. That's very, very hard to do. But I was better than average at guessing which way the cards were going to fall. And I was interested in magic also. I grew up in New York, so I could go to the magic stores on 42nd Street, talk to magicians, buy tricks, and then do magic shows for birthday parties and art openings and things like that. So in the course of standing on the stage, pretending to read people's minds, I occasionally would have clear images of where the person looks, where the person is living, what their home situation is like. So I could supplement my nasty old magic trick with some genuine ESP that came my way. And then as a high school student, I began to read the scientific literature on ESP research, and I gave up magic for the real stuff.
I think Kevin and I have both different abilities in terms of remote viewing and psychic ability, but both experienced that. And certainly I've on stage I have utilized remote viewing to have the audience in fits of giggles as I wander around somebody's home and describes it, much to their frustration and horror, wondering whether or not I can see in the drawers and all those things. So but that came largely through a development of mediumship. So in terms of your ability, is that solely in respect of ESP and remote viewing, or is there spirit communication that kind of is there for you as well?
I have not had spirit communication. My darling daughter passed away 10 years ago, and people often bring me messages from her, and they bring me messages. Elizabeth was a psychiatrist, very clever woman, and recently she gave somebody a message and said, tell my father this information, that will convince him that I still survive, because no other person besides him and me knows that information. Mm-hmm. And that I found quite exciting, because that was true. Because we had my wife and I had a little mishap in early child raising where we didn't know what the hell we were doing. And it was apparently traumatic for my daughter. So even 10 years after she died at age 50, she was still upset about the way we treated her as a 2-year-old. But that was our secret, but only she knew about it.
Yeah. And it's very powerful, isn't it? That sort of validation is incredibly powerful. So in terms of your early experiences in ESP, when we know that we can identify or see something that's not in our immediate vicinity, how does that come through to you? Does it come through as an image or a feeling or a knowing?
Yeah, all of my psychic functioning is visual. I have somebody hide something, and then I can tell them what it looks like. And that's what I do on stage. I'm standing here, I've got an interesting object in the box. Tell me what I've got. And generally half the people in the audience will be able to do that. And in fact, if I'm doing a big workshop, for a weekend workshop, I will tell people that I will guarantee everyone here will either do something psychic or see something psychic, and if that doesn't happen, I'll give you your money back. And after a decade of traveling all over the world doing remote viewing, nobody has ever asked me for their money back.
Oh, wow.
that's excited me. And after doing this for 2 decades for the CIA, I thought that I should make a film. Instead of telling people about it, I wanted to make a documentary showing what we had done, how we trained people to be psychic, how we had found things, and give people an idea that psychic ability is available. It's part of their nature. So we made this film called Third Eye Spies, which will come out at the end of February in theaters and on digital platforms. So you'll be able to download it to your screen or see it in the theater. And that will happen the end of February. And this film is really the true story of CIA psychic spying. Because I would go to work, and half of my work would be to try and understand this phenomena. And we published our papers in Nature magazine, which is premier in the world, and the Journal of the American IEEE Institute of Electrical Engineers. And then recently I've written a book called The Reality of ESP. Mm-hmm. So you can read the book and go to the film. The Reality of ESP, I have a couple of chapters that show you how to do remote viewing. So my purpose in writing this book, The Reality of ESP, is to encourage people to work with a friend and develop their own psychic abilities.
So would you say that this is more of an instructional autobiography? Is this your story, or are you explaining it?
No, I've written another book that's my story. I've written a book called Do You See What I See?, which is sort of a psychic autobiography. Mm-hmm. This is my most recent book, Reality of ESP, where I go through all of the material that had previously been top secret and is now declassified. Right. So in order to make this film, we had to go to the government and get declassified all the previously top secret material that we did for the CIA and Defense Intelligence Agencies. So In fact, we had to go to our congressman, and it was with her help that the CIA decided they would rather declassify this material than go to court and argue why it should still remain classified. So they decided the easiest thing is to let us do what we wanted to do, and presumably would not be a problem. And our good fortune is that our two principal contract monitors from the CIA had retired, and they agreed to be in this film. So we have two high-level CIA contract monitors, a physicist and a physician, looking at you man-to-man from the screen saying, yes, they polygraphed us, I was there, and what Targ said is true, it really happened, because I saw it happen. So that kind of testimony is without precedent in a film. There are many films showing this and that about ESP, but this is the first film that I've ever heard of where the CIA is on camera saying, yes, we were using psychic spies. We went to the Soviet Union and could see into their weapons factory. We could see an atomic bomb test in China. And we even opened the film with a testimony from Jimmy Carter saying we were looking for a downed Russian bomber in Africa, and we couldn't find it because it was in the jungle. So we went to a psychic in California, and she was able to mark a map and show us where it was. And we landed a helicopter, and as the helicopter landed, we saw natives pulling pieces of metal through the jungle because the helicopter landed within 1 mile of the downed Russian bomber.
And that's a true story. That's a true story.
Yeah, that's in Jimmy Carter's recent autobiography, mm-hmm. And we have him saying that on camera. We opened the film with Jimmy Carter saying, this is the most remarkable thing that happened to me in my presidency, that these guys were able... You see, the bomber crashed in the jungle, so the satellite cameras couldn't see it through the jungle. So they had to abandon satellite photography and call the folks at SRI with the psychics. That did not make anybody happy, but that's what kept us funded for 2 decades.
Yeah. Now, well, let's roll back just a little bit, Russell, because there's a big gap here. How did you personally get involved with the CIA? It's not like back then we just called information, got the number, and called them up. Were you introduced, or did you do specific college work that got their attention? How did you and the CIA come together?
I was involved in the earliest development of the laser. I was the laser pioneer in the 1950s, you can imagine. And in that period, I built stuff for the CIA. So okay. CIA knew me as a laser guy who could actually make complicated things and have them work. So that by 1972, I actually had some buddies in the CIA for whom I had done stuff, straight up laser stuff. But by 72, I was really finished with lasers. I felt that I had put in my honest work, and it's time for a change in career, change in trajectory. So I went back to the same people I had been working for and said, I have this new thing to do. I have, by the way, built an ESP teaching machine. And I can, to off to the side now, my ESP game is called ESP Trainer, and that's a online application that you can get at the Apple Store for no cost. So if you go to the App Store, you can download ESP Trainer at no cost, and you can see what we were doing for NASA to demonstrate that people can improve their psychic functioning. Now, I had that with me in the 60s and 70s. So when I went to a conference with NASA, it just happened that Wernher von Braun was there. There's a conference on speculative technology. So von Braun was there, and Arthur C. Clarke was there, and the director of NASA was also there. And von Braun really loved this ESP gadget, and he did very well. He showed that he was outstanding ESP ability, is what the machine rated him. So he was able to go to the director and say, give these guys some money. Maybe they're onto something. This seems to be legit. So with von Braun's help and the help of Edgar Mitchell, NASA agreed to give us some money. So NASA was really the first government agency that said yes, and the CIA came along shortly after NASA.
You know, just as an interesting side note, Russell, I'm in Huntsville, Alabama, where they brought Wernher von Braun, and we built the Saturn V.
I've been to Huntsville. I built a giant laser for the folks at Huntsville as part of a ground-based laser system to measure the winds when you launch spacecraft. So we had a program called CLAWS, which was Coherent Laser Airborne Wind Sensor. And we had a side-by-side test with the balloons, and we did much better than the balloons. So I'm familiar with Huntsville.
Yes. Now, after your involvement in this, you know, once you got your feet under you in the CIA and you began to do your work, you know, along with the CIA comes the military intelligence agencies. When did they begin to take the program serious, or was this something right away?
Well, we were bit by bit. Eventually, everybody was working with us. Eventually, all the intelligence agencies in the government were supporting our work at SRI. After CIA, my closest association had been with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio. So I went to brief my research and development friends at Wright-Patterson, and one of the folks said, yes, I know about that stuff. I've been following your work. And that was Dale Graff, who was a research manager in foreign technology. And he had an interest in this. So he said, I want to train up some of my people. I'll support your work. So Wright-Patterson was a big supporter of ours. And then Graff went to the Defense Intelligence Agency, which you may know the kind of super agencies that oversees all American intelligence. So Dale Graff got to sit in the director's chair overseeing research all over the intelligence community. So we had support from NASA, the Air Force, CIA, even the Navy was interested in communicating with submarines. So we were able to demonstrate to people that this really works.
I think that's my question. I'm listening from somebody from England who probably doesn't have the depth of knowledge in terms of your journey that Kevin might. And that's one of my biggest queries is how does a government agency like the CIA or, military defense organizations, what sort of evidence did you have to provide to convince them the ESP was something worth investing in? Because nationally, internationally, people still have extreme reservations about believing that somebody can see something that is not concrete in front of them.
They have to be convinced one by one. So in terms of NASA, I eventually wound up face-to-face with the research administrator, George Pesdertz. And I even hate to tell you what I did with him. I was a magician in the beginning, a fake magician. And this is a story I've never told before.
Uh-oh, exclusive.
And I knew that we would get to a point where this administrator said, show me something psychic. So I prepared to deceive him. That's not to take any chances. Mm-hmm. So I did a card trick for him, which, unless you're skillful in magic, it's a card trick. I've never been, in 50 years of doing magic, I've never been caught doing this card trick. It's a quite amazing work. As we say in the magic business, the effect is he shuffled a deck of cards, chose one, looked at it, put it back in the deck, and then I turned to my partner and said, George has chosen a card. Tell me what it looks like as it appears in your awareness. And then my buddy tells George what his card was. So as I described it to you right now, unless you're a magician, that will seem utterly impossible. Mm-hmm. So, but George was blown away. A shocking, great magic trick. For those in the magician's business, I just used the so-called magician's force. That is, he didn't really, he had the experience of shuffling the cards and choosing one. But in slow motion camera, you would see that's not at all what happened. So he grabbed the cards back and he...
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Shuffled them in his hand. He said, okay, I've got another card. Tell me what this one is. Now, of course, I have no way to do that because here he's actually shuffled the cards, chosen one freely. I have no idea what he's chosen. So I just closed my eyes and I said, looks like a red card. I think it's a three of diamonds. And that's what he chose. So once again, I was able to supplement my magic, my pretend magic, with what ESP comes my way. So I have always had some latent ability, but I wouldn't want to bet my contract on my latent ability. But if the guy has already bet on my card trick, then I'm willing to try it again. And the second time, I was also correct.
So, I mean, that's one scenario. But in order to continue to build up that repertoire and for other people to invest and to utilize the skills of yourself and your team, you would still need to consistently be giving good outcomes and proving this ability. And ESP, a remote viewing, psychic ability, mediumship, whatever you want to call it, it doesn't always give you clear-cut answers.
Well, in the experiments we did, we would, Kit Green was our first CIA contractor. Kit Green was a very, very intelligent physician, head of the life science division at CIA, and he came to our laboratory and he said, I want to be part of what you're doing. So each day for a series of 9 trials, Kit Green would go with my partner, Hal Puthoff. He'd go to the director's office, and they would be given randomly traveling orders, go someplace in the Bay Area. Now, in the Bay Area, we have mountains, reservoirs, boat docks, the very rich, like Copenhagen. You could have everything you could imagine for a very target-rich area. So they would go hide someplace, and I would sit in our little screen room with Pat Price. Price was a retired police commissioner, very, very psychic person, probably the premier psychic we'd ever worked with, because he could read things that are hidden away, but that's another story. So each day for about 10 days, I would sit with Price in the laboratory, and my partner Hal and Kit Green would go hide some random place, and Price would give a description of what it looked like that the CIA contract monitor was hiding. And in the, we did 9 trials, which were eventually published in Nature magazine. So this is a formal double-blind experiment. At the end of 9 trials, another judge would evaluate which target corresponds to which hiding place. That is to say, which set of drawings that Price made matched best which hiding place. And in the 9 trials, 7 of them were first place match, which is odds of almost 1 in a million, which is to say, if my partner Hal had been taken away and hidden 7 days, if my partner had been hidden 9 days in a row, we would have found him the first place we looked in 7 out of those 9 trials. And CIA was very impressed with that, as indeed they should have been. So the 7 out of 9 successes with Price finding the CIA guy said, okay, we're convinced we'll support you.
And so, and your film that we really must go on to, this documentary, talks about your life in terms of working as with ESP and using ESP as a form of spying. So how did you go from displaying your skills, saying, look, this is how we can help, to your first task or mission?
One of the first operational tasks. Well, I should tell you, the thing we did before Kit Green came out to work with us, he said, here's some coordinates, geographical coordinates. Can you tell us what's there? And Pat Price sat down and said to us on the audio tape, I'm flying at 5,000 feet at these coordinates. I see a circular area. They're big radio antennas. This is a military base of some kind. There are jeeps that can drive into the hillside. And down in the basement is where they're really doing the secret stuff. I see a filing cabinet. In fact, there are 3 green filing cabinets, and the name of this place is Pitchfork, but all the programs are called things like 8-Ball and 14-Ball and Rack Up. They all have billiard names attached to them, and that's what I get. Now, it turned out that what Kit Green had in mind for us to describe was the log cabin of his friend just over the hill from this place, which is called Sugar Grove, which is a super secret cryptography location belonging to the National Security Agency. So this is one of America's tip-top secret places that Price penetrated. He did indeed read the code names. Not only was the place secret, but the code names themselves were secret. So that was a demonstration that we could penetrate even the most secret things in the world. So that's what got Kit Green to come out to us and see what we're doing in California. When you asked how did they understand that what we're doing was worth looking at, is that the psychic functioning that we were able to manifest in our lab was an order of magnitude more accurate, more reliable than people had been doing previously. And part of that's because we were doing tasks that correspond to people's ability. That is, guessing cards or describing hidden pictures is much harder than describing a real location.
Now, Russell, I got to ask this. At any point while you guys are experiencing this incredible success of, you know, psychically penetrating a highly classified, you know, government facility, did it ever cross your minds that maybe the government, this type of success will scare them and they will decide, listen, this is too much of a risk. What if they go rogue and possibly terminate you?
Good question.
Well, since I was not the provider of this information, I was not the famous psychic, what they did do, our first operational task for the government was to describe a Soviet weapons factory in Siberia. And we're able to describe this at great length in the film because we have all of our documents and we have overhead photography from the Soviet weapons factory. And Pat Price was able to describe a giant crane. This is in Soviet Siberia, a place called Semipalatinsk. Price described this giant crane rolling back and forth over a building, and he made a drawing of that, which was a architectural copy of what the thing actually looked like in the satellite photography. So it was crystal clear to anybody that what Price was drawing really was at the site. And I show that whole episode in Reality of ESP. I've got the previously classified documents and what Price drew. And that convinced the CIA that what we're doing is real. And then they ask us to describe what are they building with this crane? What's going on underground? And Price was able to describe the construction of giant 60-foot spheres that were being welded together from iron gores, like orange people slices that are being welded together. And he did that so accurately that, just as you said, Price showed himself essentially to be omniscient. That is, he could read secret documents, he could penetrate the Soviet laboratory. So he said, you're too valuable to be hanging out there with the psychic researchers in California. We want you to come back to Virginia and live in a farmhouse just a couple of miles from CIA headquarters. So they moved Price from our neighborhood. They basically took him away from Stanford Research Institute in Menlo Park, California, and moved him to Virginia. And he continued to do psychic things for Ken Kress as a one-on-one contractor for the CIA, and within 6 months, Price was dead.
Oh, my gosh. Well, do you think that was intentional?
No one knows what the answer is. We know that Price was on a daily basis giving his top secret information to the Church of Scientology that he was an enthusiastic member of. And that became common knowledge the following year after his death. Now, Price was a very smart guy, but he wasn't a trained spy. So he may have had a heart attack, or the Russians may have killed him, or the CIA may have been nervous about Superman's gone rogue. That is, what do you do when you discover that Superman is a double agent giving us information about what he finds when he penetrates the Libyan embassy, and then he gives all that top secret information to the Scientologists? That might have been a big problem for the CIA.
Oh, it absolutely. I mean, knowing what we know about Scientology today, absolutely. I mean, this is a bizarre connection that I really didn't expect.
So part of our film is the mystery of who killed Pat Price. And I can tell you at the outset, we don't know the answer, but it's a good mystery story. Because the real question is, how come the most psychic man in the world died shortly after he went to work for the CIA? And we don't know that, but I'll tell you. But in the film, I show you what the suppositions are.
So in the film, Russell, does it then explore, after Price died, does it explore how the rest of the team then felt and whether there was vulnerabilities within the rest of the team? Whether they were scared that something they may have said?
Nobody was scared. Nobody felt frightened. The idea... See, it's a little time warp. We didn't know. Nobody in California knew about the CIA connection until a year later.
Right.
So the whole idea that somebody might have killed him out of fear never crossed our mind, because we didn't know that Price was working for the CIA, working for the Scientologists at the same time he's working for the CIA. In fact, I misspoke. It was 2 years after. 2 years after he died. Price died in 1975, and it wasn't until 1977 that the FBI broke into the Celebrity Center in Hollywood belonging to the Scientologists and found all this data that described what Price had been doing for the CIA.
Right, okay.
And then, of course, all hell broke loose, because all of this top secret stuff was suddenly in the papers, that CIA had hired this policeman who had this amazing ability.
Man, I mean, when the government found out that he had been sharing this with the Scientologists, they must have had a meltdown somewhere.
Yes, but we don't. Yeah, that's definitely true. And the mystery is, we don't know when they got that information. We don't know when the CIA learned that Price was a double agent.
My gosh. Yeah, you got me high-centered on that right now, Russell. But now,
so we have 2 hours of cinema exploring that problem.
Yes, Third Eye Spies. Would you say that it is, when you put this together, is it aimed more towards the believers, or, you know, general?
It is aimed toward anyone who has the slightest interest in knowing what's going on. It is not this. I'm primarily a scientist. I spent my ESP career was 10 years out of a 40-year career doing straight up science. So I'm not making this film as a believer. I'm making this film to show you what the data is. So we spent 5 years interviewing the most knowledgeable people in this era. We've talked to Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut. We have a Nobel Prize winner. We have two CIA contract monitors on camera So we have a lot of very knowledgeable, capable people describing their experience and their opinions, together with some other physicists. So this is not a film for believers. This is people who want to know what their own abilities are. My as a Buddhist, my opinion is that this is not New Age. This is old stuff. The Buddhists have been writing about this since 500 years before Christ. The earliest writings of the Buddha say the separation is an illusion. There is no separation in consciousness. And the Hindu writer Patanjali at the same time wrote a book which is still in print. The Sutra of the Patanjali has a quarter of the book telling you how to go from your meditation into seeing in the distance, seeing into the future, healing the sick, diagnosing illnesses. And, of course, all these abilities in the Hindu tradition are called siddhis and are not the goal. They're things you will experience on the way to connecting with the divine or the universal. And in Buddhist writings and Hindu writings from thousands of years ago, there are instructions on how to develop your psychic abilities, which are inherent. It's the idea in Buddhism is that your nature is timeless awareness, that who you are is timeless awareness. If you think that who you are is what you see in the mirror, you're in for a lot of suffering.
Wow.
To answer your question, this is not New Age stuff. This is stuff that the smartest people in the world have been writing about for 2,000 years.
See, and I'm glad you put it that way, because really, I mean, science and spirituality, they really are intertwined. Now, before we run out of time, Russell, which we're quickly on the clock now, when and where can people see your documentary once it's released?
The documentary will be first released to digital channels, that is Netflix, Amazon, so forth, where you can download the film to your monitor. Shortly after that, it will be released to theaters, and it will be streaming on the streaming networks like HBO or Netflix. So all that's going to happen at the end of February.
And
the name of the film is Third Eye Spies, and you can just remember that it's the true story of CIA psychic spying.
And where can individuals get in touch with you if they want to share something with you?
If they want to see the coming attraction of this film, they can go to thirdeyespies.com. I have a very well-made 90-second coming attraction at thirdeyespies.com, and that also tells you a little bit more about the film, and you can leave messages as well.
Okay. Russell, before we say anything else really in respect of the film, etc., can I ask you a cheeky personal question? And it really is just I've been intrigued listening to you because of obviously my interest in remote viewing and having that ability myself. But do you feel, I mean, you've described a lifetime's worth of development and helping others to develop the gift. And so in your experience, have you found that your abilities towards ESP have grown over the years to present day? Or do you feel that there has been a peak in your life and a journey kind of up to that peak and then down again? How have you experienced ESP personally?
Well, people generally have a certain amount of psychic ability, like music abilities, that they're born with. Mm-hmm. But in ESP, it's a signal-to-noise problem. An engineer would say it's a signal-to-noise problem, and we don't know how to improve the signal. That is, the goal is to be able to discern the psychic signal from the mental noise. The mental noise is guessing, imagination, and other things that create the ongoing mental chatter. Mm-hmm. So the goal is to learn to separate the psychic signal from the mental noise, which principally is don't try and guess what it is. So if I tell you I have an object in my hand here, don't say, oh, it looks like a book, looks like a hairbrush. You just tell me what's the shape and what the texture is and what it feels like if you would hold it, and stay away from trying to guess what it is. Psychic functioning is not analytic. Yeah. So as long as you stay with your feelings, that are the magic words that I use when I'm interviewing somebody, is tell me about the surprising images that show up in your awareness. I would never say, where are they hiding, or what's the object in the box, because they have no way to know that, because that's an analytical question. If I tell you, what are your feelings, what are you experiencing, you know that, and our success is that we've been able to tailor our questions in the direction of what actually works rather than what doesn't work. If you have a program where you sit down and say, okay, where are they hiding now? That will never work. That will fail every time, because the psychic has no way to know the name of where they're hiding. And Padmasambhava, the great Buddhist teacher of the 800s, he has a book called Self-Liberation Through Seeing with Naked Awareness. It sounds like something contemporary. And he says that in order to develop this naked awareness, you have to give up your desire to name the thing that you're looking at in the distance or in the future. Give up your desire to name it. That was totally understood 1,200 years ago.
Well, it has been a fascinating show. Russell Targ, Third Eye Spies. Russell, thank you so much for coming on with us. It's been an absolute honor to speak with you.
It's been a pleasure for me. Lots of good questions.
Awesome. But we got to one more time. I want to give you an opportunity to put out your website. And one more time, at the end of February, Third Eye Spies is being released.
And if you want to read something in the meantime, my book is The Reality of ESP, that gives you the recipe for working with a partner and developing your remote viewing ability.
Awesome. Well, Russell, thank you. Thank you for being on the House of Mystery with me and Julie today.
Thanks very much for the opportunity.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.